Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Happy Feast of St. Nicholas. Hope your day is going well. A beautiful feast day. And then later in the week, we're going to be celebrating, of course, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, which is a holy day of obligation. So we'll be off that day. A little bit more on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. And one of my favorite movies of all time, The Song of Bernadette, which I highly recommend that you look up online. It is available, starring Jennifer Jones. Doug Keck and I were talking about this not too long ago. If you haven't seen it, it'd be a great opportunity to watch it with your family, maybe before or after going to Mass on, of course, Thursday, which is, again, a holy day of obligation. Coming up on our program today, it'll be great to catch up with Father Dwight Longenecker. Again, he hasn't been on in a while, but he's just a great speaker and blogger and writer and a wonderful priest, a convert to Catholicism. He was brought up as an evangelical, earned a degree in speech and English before actually studying theology at Oxford, serving also as a minister in the Church of England, but converted to Catholicism in 1995 with his wife and family. He's authored over 20 books and booklets on the Catholic faith and culture. He's also an award-winning blogger, podcaster, and journalist, and he's a pastor of Our Lady of the Rosary Church in Greenville, South Carolina. I spoke there a few years ago hanging out with my good friend Mary Dudley, and she brought me over to that parish, which is actually her parish, and I got a chance to meet Father in person, which was awesome. So we're going to be talking particularly about his new book today from our friends at Sophia, The Secret of the Bethlehem Shepherds. Awesome. Can't wait. And then we'll wrap up with Father Bart Tolson. You remember Father Bart, good friend of the late Father Stu, and that movie came out a few months ago, Father Stu. And they're actually re-releasing the film, more of a family-friendly film, minus some of the language. The language was a little bit of an issue, but it still really did really well in terms of people interested in the life of Father Stu. So we'll talk with Father Bart, revisiting Father Stu. That comes up at 39 minutes past the hour. As far as the forecast is concerned, there are some issues with rain around the country. We'll take a look at that right now. Not too many crazy things, but there is some development in the Atlantic of this odd weather. Also, some storms developing in the future, in the near future, in Northern California. Right now, though, for today and tomorrow, the National Weather Service is telling us heavy rain in the Mid-South, producing some flash flooding. Rain will expand over the lower and central Mississippi Valley and across the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast throughout the midweek. And the Pacific Northwest mountain and low elevation snow returning in the middle of the week as well. And we'll have a few weather stories in our news, which is actually coming up right now. It is a Tuesday. It's almost 4 minutes past the hour. You are listening to Catholic Connection, of course, a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. A ton of news to get through on a Tuesday morning, the second week of Advent, the Feast of St. Nicholas. So let's get started right now. For more details on this very important story, check out the report on CatholicNewsAgency.com. CNA reporting, for the second year in a row, Nigeria has now been left off the U.S. State Department's list of countries that engage in or tolerate the world's worst religious freedom violations. Now, this despite regular reports of kidnappings and killings of Christians, and it's sparking outcry from members of a bipartisan government watchdog group. As CNA explains, for more than 20 years, a U.S. president has been required to annually review the status of religious freedom in every country in the world and designate those governments and entities that perpetrate or tolerate severe religious freedom violations as countries of particular concern. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announcing this year's designations earlier this month, and although several Islamic terrorist groups active in Nigeria were listed, Nigeria itself was not. Now, in Nigeria as a whole, at least 60,000 Christians have been killed, many by their Muslim countrymen, over the past 20 years. And an estimated 3,400-plus Christians were killed in Nigeria in the first 200 days of 2021, or 17 per day, according to that study. In a statement, the head of the commission, Nuri Turkel, said there is no justification for the State Department's failure to recognize Nigeria or India as egregious violators of religious freedom as they each clearly meet the legal standards for designation as CPCs. The commission, he said, is tremendously disappointed that the Secretary of State did not implement our recommendations and recognize the severity of the religious freedom violations documented in those countries. The Supreme Court signaling it may side with the Colorado web designer Lori Smith says people should not be punished for communicating, speaking, and creating custom artwork that goes along the lines with what they believe.
And I do have clients who identify as LGBT. I cannot create every message requested of me. There are some messages I can't create no matter who requests them. And at the core of this case is the right for everyone to speak consistent with what they believe.
The high court hearing arguments yesterday involving the graphic designer who refuses to create wedding websites for same-sex couples because she says it's in conflict with her Christian beliefs. The court's conservative majority appeared to favor the designer's First Amendment rights over Colorado's so-called anti-discrimination law. The court is expected to issue a decision in the case at some point before its term wraps up in June. The two students who survived the murder of four University of Idaho students have released their first statement since the attack, Brad Ford explains.
Bethany Funk and Dylan Mortensen wrote statements that were read by a youth pastor. Mortensen wrote, "I know somewhere Zanna and Ethan are together, keeping each other company, watching us and telling us it's okay and that we have each other." Funk says she wishes she could give her roommates one last hug. The two were asleep when the killings happened. Police have ruled them out as suspects, and so far, no one has been arrested in the case.
The White House says Joe Biden does not want to see the end of a COVID-19 vaccine mandate for military service members. That's an agreement with the Defense Secretary that the mandate should stay in place. But Republican lawmakers have threatened to delay that passage of the annual defense authorization bill if the mandate, which was put in place last year, is not rescinded. Mark Mayfield tells us a new report says hackers with ties to the Chinese government stole millions of dollars in U.S. COVID relief benefits.
NBC News reports the China-based hacking group known as APT41 stole at least $20 million through Small Business Administration loans and unemployment insurance funds in more than a dozen states. Officials confirmed to NBC there are currently more than 1,000 ongoing investigations involving transnational and domestic actors defrauding public benefits.
More Americans are feeling the impact of inflation. A new survey from Gallup finding 55% say inflation has had a severe or moderate impact on them. That's up from 45% who said the same thing in November of last year, lower and middle income households being the hardest hit. Liz Kennedy tells us respiratory illnesses are surging nationwide, with 44 states now reporting high levels of cases that are affecting the medicine supply for children.
The Atlanta-based CDC reports the spike comes as flu season worsens and hospitals struggle to deal with many RSV cases in the Peach State and throughout the country affecting children. And to make matters worse, the increased number of cases also impacts the supply of medicines given to kids frequently, like liquid acetaminophen and ibuprofen, according to CNN. But FDA officials say they are monitoring the situation and working closely with drug manufacturers to address any problems.
State and local leaders are trying to prevent fentanyl deaths. Rob Walker, the father of a 17-year-old San Carlos teen in California who died from the drug, says social media should be able to stop the sale of fentanyl on their platforms.
There's no reason these social media companies can't stop this before it gets out to our kids.
State Senator Dave Cortese of California, meanwhile, introducing a measure yesterday aimed at preventing fentanyl deaths. Critics calling out mainstream media outlets are failing to cover Elon Musk's release of information on Twitter's censorship of the Hunter Biden laptop story just weeks before the 2020 presidential election. The major Sunday shows on ABC, NBC, CBS, and CNN devoting only a total of 7 seconds to the story, MSNBC devoting 3 minutes of coverage, and CNN covered it for just 10 minutes over the entire weekend. Musk claiming in a tweet that the platform interfered in elections under previous leadership, but he asserted that Twitter will be more effective, transparent, and even-handed going forward. Georgia Senate candidate Herschel Walker urging folks in the Peach State to head to the polls today. He appeared on Fox News Monday ahead of the anticipated runoff against Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock. The Republicans saying if he's elected, he'll give Georgians a voice in Washington, warning that not voting means more of Joe Biden and other Democratic rule. Recent polling shows Warnock does have a slight lead in the closely watched race. San Antonio police think they've busted up a human smuggling ring. Police Sergeant Washington Moscosco says San Antonio, the people were from Honduras and El Salvador that were in that city temporarily.
I talked to them briefly. They said they've been here at least a couple of days. We're getting some water, we're getting some food, but they did let us know that they were being detained against their will by armed individuals.
It happened when authorities were answering a call to a Northwest Side residence. When they arrived at the location, they found six people inside the residence. Two suspects at the home were arrested, while a third drove away in a vehicle. At last report, that suspect remained at large. Hurricane season is over, but a potential subtropical system is churning out in the Atlantic. Richard Pasch with the National Hurricane Center says a low-pressure area does not have well-organized circulation, at least not yet.
We're looking at the models. They do suggest that it may try to take on some subtropical characteristics over the next few days. Could certainly acquire the strength of a tropical storm. Winds are near gale, already near gale force, well to the northeast of the center.
Cyclone formation over the next 5 days is around 40%. He also says a potential storm should stay out in the Atlantic. And while hurricane season ended less than a week ago, seeing a system outside the window is an infrequent occurrence, but not unprecedented. And as one winter storm exits, another one is taking aim.
And the models are indicating that we're going to be seeing another storm system approaching California by late Thursday, and we are expecting some precipitation into Friday as well.
In California, with this colder system, National Weather Service meteorologist Jeff Barlow says to expect snow in lower elevations. He says it will be drier, so there'll be less rain this time around, but is advising folks traveling in the foothills and mountain passes to bring chains and to expect delays and road closures as well. The Sacramento Valley receiving nearly 2 inches of rain and roughly 2 to 4 feet of snow across the Sierra over the weekend. They're not in Kansas anymore, but as Trey Thomas explains, they're still in Tampa.
Most of the residents of Tampa, Kansas are enjoying a free 4-day vacation in the Florida city of the same name. Santiago Coriata with Tampa's tourism agency, Visit Tampa Bay, says it's a gesture of goodwill for the holidays and a way to get some publicity in the Midwest. Southwest Airlines and local hotels covered airfare and lodging for the Kansas town's approximately 100 residents.
Holiday shipping deadlines, well, they're getting closer. FedEx saying boxes sent with standard ground shipping must be received by December 14th, while UPS is directing customers to visit their website for an estimate on ground shipments. The U.S. Postal Service says retail, ground, and first-class mail parcels and envelopes need to go out by December 17th. And this sounds like, yes, again, something else out of the Jetsons. Phil Hewlett tells us that a San Francisco Bay Area startup promising flying cars in something like 3 years.
Aleph Aeronautics of San Mateo wants to start delivering its $300,000 Model A flying car to customers by the end of 2025. Aleph is already taking deposits from potential customers, $150 to get on the waiting list, and $1,500 for a priority spot on that list. The CEO of the company says building a flying car is no more complicated than a Toyota Corolla.
It is a Tuesday, almost 14 minutes past the hour on this, the Feast of St. Nicholas, and we are in the second week of Advent. Good to have you on the program. Looking forward to interviewing Father Dwight Longenecker again. He joins us, The Secret of the Bethlehem Shepherds. More on that coming up.
We are the pro-life generation, passionate about building the culture of life in our healthcare and in our nation. But not all healthcare options are equally pro-life, and some provide morally objectionable procedures. CMF Curo is different. CMF Curo is a pro-life Catholic healthcare ministry providing a pathway for its members to build the culture of life in their healthcare choices, not destroy it. Learn more about CMF Curo at mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
The EWTN home video highlight for December is the EWTN Family Christmas Special. The Choir of the Eternal Word Television Network performs classical Christmas carols with a special commentary by Father Joseph Mary Wolfe. Order your DVD or CD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for almost 20 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent millions of dollars to thousands of pro-life charities. 5G coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. Live chat and a video introduction are available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Always great to keep touch with the amazing Father Dwight Longenecker, brought up as an evangelical. Earned a degree in speech and English before studying theology at Oxford, serving as a minister, as you mentioned earlier, the Church of England. Back in 1995, received into the One Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church along with his wife and family. He's authored over 20 books already and booklets on Catholic faith and culture. And as everyone knows, he's also an award-winning blogger, podcaster, and journalist. And he's a pastor of the beautiful Our Lady of the Rosary Church in Greenville, South Carolina, which I had the chance to visit a few years ago. Ordained as a Catholic priest under the pastoral provision for married former Protestant ministers. Father Longenecker and his beautiful wife, Allison, have four grown-up children. And Father, good to catch up with you again. And it was such a nice time meeting you a few years ago when I was speaking down in Greenville. Congrats on the new book.
Yeah, thank you very much for the invitation. The book is the product of a two-month sabbatical I had in Jerusalem.
Wow.
Earlier this year.
So, you obviously, if you're in Jerusalem, you're not that far from Bethlehem, so you must have gone over to Shepherd's Field, I'm assuming, correct?
Yes. I had the opportunity to take this sabbatical, and so having written a book previously on the Magi, on the wise men, I thought it would be good to investigate the Bethlehem shepherds. So, I was given a place at the famous Institute of Biblical Studies with the Dominicans there in Jerusalem, and used that as a springboard for my studies, and also did some field work by going over to Bethlehem and meeting some present-day Bethlehem shepherds.
So what did you find out that surprised you? And I know this is in the book, but I want to just kind of highlight the book so people will buy it, because it makes a great Christmas present, by the way.
Well, the shepherds appear in Luke's Gospel. The wise men appear in Matthew's Gospel. And so I used the opportunity to also explore some more of the details of Luke's Gospel, Luke's infancy narrative, the story of Christmas in Luke's Gospel, in addition to the shepherds. And one of the things which impressed me once again was how much we have, over the centuries, added elaborations and added extra traditions and details to the Christmas story. It's understandable because it's such a beautiful story with some pretty irresistible elements. You know, wizards, faraway wizards from the east, angels appearing to people, animals, babies, pregnant mothers, all these things are very attractive. And so they've also attracted a lot of extra traditions and a lot of extra elaborations. And I tried to cut through some of those to share with people what the story, the events of the story that would have been actual and historical.
All right, so let's talk about some of those traditions that may have gotten a little bit out of hand in terms of elaboration. What do you think is a problem when it comes to the understanding of the shepherds?
Well, they're not necessarily problems. It's okay to have these extra additions, kind of like we have. The analogy I use in the book is it's a bit like having a Christmas tree. You have the beautiful bare pine tree, which is beautiful in itself, but then we bring it inside and we add decorations to it. And that's kind of what we've done with the Christmas story. An example of this, for instance, is something we all take for granted, is that Mary rode a donkey from Nazareth to Bethlehem. But that's not actually in Luke or Matthew's gospel. Mm-hmm. That comes up in the gospel of the proto-evangelium of James, which is an extra-biblical writing from about the second century.
Mm-hmm.
So it's things like that which have crept into the story over the years from various sources, which we now take for granted, but which aren't actually in the gospel.
All right.
I try to trim those things away, not getting rid of them, but just explaining to people that this isn't actually in Luke's gospel. What does Luke actually say?
All right, so what about the shepherds? Because Shepherd's Field is one of my favorite places. My married name actually means shepherd in Italian, pastore, and so it means a lot to us. My husband's name, Dominic Pastore, means shepherd of the Lord. So the shepherds, we have a very close relationship with the gospel reading about the shepherds and also Shepherd's Field.
Yeah, one of the things which has happened over the centuries is that, quite naturally, the shepherds, we view things through our own cultural eyes. And so the shepherds that we understand today tend to be understood through the lens of medieval Europe. And the shepherd that we envision is a kind of country bumpkin, a yokel who comes in from the hills and rubs his chin and says, well, let's go and see this baby, you know, as if it's an Englishman or a German or a French shepherd. And that's understandable because these traditions come to us over centuries and through European culture. But in fact, the Middle Eastern shepherd is embedded in what we would call the Bedouins culture.
Bedouins, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yep. The Bedouins are nomads and semi-nomads who wander from place to place with their flocks. So the Bethlehem shepherds would have been semi-nomads who were living in caves in the Bethlehem area. And if this sounds unusual to us, the amazing thing is when you go to the Holy Land today, you can still see houses that are built in front of caves, mm-hmm. or Bedouin tents that are in front of caves.
Yep.
And they use the caves originally as a dwelling place, but then when they build a little house in front of it, they then use the cave as the place to stable their animals.
Right. And sometimes, even when you're driving on the pilgrimage bus, because I've had the privilege, thanks be to God, to visit the Holy Land many times, you will see them in the fields out in the distance.
We actually had the opportunity with our guide from Bethlehem to go out and visit a Bedouin family and to inspect their flocks and talk to them about their lifestyle. And they actually also showed us one of the hillside caves. And they're all over the place out there. One of the hillside caves where shepherds would have lived while they were actually tending their flocks. And when you go to the shepherd's fields in Beth-Sehor, which is the town next to Bethlehem, you will actually go into a little shrine, which is an ancient cave, which is where the shepherds would have spent the night.
So you had the opportunity to do this. Did it change then your understanding of the shepherds based on what you've been studying and reading? Did it give you a wholly different perspective?
Yeah, it did, because that Bedouin culture, which is still in existence in the Holy Land today, is a very, very ancient culture. I came across a very interesting book by a Jewish scholar who pointed out who had spent decades living with Bedouin in the desert, and he then compared what he found with the culture recorded in the Old Testament. And what we find in the Bedouin culture is basically a culture that's thousands and thousands of years old, still being maintained today, and this is the same culture we would have seen in the Bethlehem shepherds in the time of Jesus' birth.
So what was the Bethlehem like in your research that you found, Father, at the time of our Lord's birth? And it was a very, very tiny village. And why is it so important, do you think?
Well, it's important because of its links back into the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
We know it from the Old Testament that, of course, Bethlehem was the hometown of King David. It was called the City of David. And in the Old Testament times, it was in the times of David and Solomon, it was actually a much more important town. It was actually a walled city at that point. And we know that from little details in the Old Testament where it says, for instance, in passing, I will go to Bethlehem and visit the well, which is at the gate of the city. In other words, we know, therefore, that it was a fortified city at that point. But in the time of Jesus' birth, it had sort of been degraded to a little rural village. A community of shepherd folks living in caves and living in simple homes, mm-hmm. built in front of caves, a pretty small village, agricultural village.
Yeah. I think it's really important that you were able to, both in the case of the book on the Magi and, of course, now this new book, which just came out at the end of November, to really spend time in these communities, because that's when you really learn. You get to talk to the people, the descendants, and to find out what life was really like.
Making the book, saying that St. Luke says that he spoke to eyewitnesses, and he portrays the shepherds as being the first eyewitnesses. He says, because they went and shared what they had seen with everyone, and everyone was amazed. And therefore, although the events took place some 30, 40, or 50 years before St. Luke was writing, I believe he actually spoke to the descendants of those shepherds in Bethlehem and got the story from them. Mm. And we know from the history that the shepherds did actually pass that history down orally, because when Helena, the mother of the Emperor Constantine, goes to Bethlehem in the early 4th century, she discovers the birthplace of Jesus, which was testified to by the local inhabitants.
Right. Yeah, there's so much of what St. Helena did also in various churches in Rome as well. We're talking with Father Dwight Longenecker. His latest book, The Secret of the Bethlehem Shepherds, is published by our friends at Sophia Institute Press. And it's really just, I think, a fascinating study of the reality of this situation. And we shouldn't be afraid to look at this. I mean, this is really just beautiful in terms of understanding how the people lived, what actually happened at the time of Christ and his birth. And it gives you, I think, a deeper insight and a deeper appreciation for our Lord and his circumstances of his birth and his life. More with Father Dwight when we come back. Again, the book is The Secret of the Bethlehem Shepherds, published by our friends at Sophia. We'll put a link to it on the Catholic Connection Archives. You can also get it on the EWTN Religious Catalog and SophiaInstitute.com. More with Father Dwight when we come back on a Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Stay tuned.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
When I've had enough. I ask parents, when do you decide to discipline? One of the most common answers is, when I've had enough. If discipline is designed to teach, then we need to discipline before we've had enough. We need to discipline because the behavior's wrong, not because emotionally it's pushed us to our edge. Besides, when you get to when you've had enough, you're much more likely to yell and scream and say things that you have to go to confession for. So, the suggestion is discipline out of principle, not emotion. Principle means because it needs discipline, and I'm going to do it when I'm calm. Emotion means I'm going to be moved to do it just because I'm mad.
On 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The fifth commandment, you shall not kill. At the heart of this commandment is an absolute insistence on the sacredness of human life. We read in Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5, before I ever formed you in the womb, I knew you, says the Lord. So every human life is sacred because it's caught up in the mind and the heart and the will and the love of God. And no matter how we're conceived or any circumstances, God has always known and loved every human person. And for this reason, we are to hold sacred every human life. We are, therefore, to never murder, never kill, never seek vengeance. Of course, we have issues of abortion and euthanasia today, and we have so many ways where we in some way disrespect the lives of other human persons, and even our own life. We have to learn to respect it as a great gift from God. The fifth commandment, you shall not kill.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. It is a Tuesday morning, the Feast of St. Nicholas, talking with Father Dwight Longenecker. His website, dwightlongenecker.com, The Secret of the Bethlehem Shepherds, just released by our friends at Sophia Press. Beautiful, beautiful cover of the book. Interestingly, Father, we were talking during the break, the fact that we're discussing this on the Feast of St. Nicholas, and you talk about elaborations and myths that have been put out there about the real St. Nicholas. But I guess some people might wonder, why write about this, the secret of the shepherds or the magi? Why can't we just leave our lovely memories and images alone? Now, you made an important point when we were chatting during the break, because part of the problem, as you explain, as you mentioned to me during the break, which I think really is super important, is that because of all these things that we've added, there are too many people that go ahead and dismiss the birth of Christ and Jesus in general, correct?
Yeah, like I said before the break, the Christmas story has attracted to itself an awful lot of extra legend and myth and beautiful stories. Some of them are sentimental and beautiful and add to our Christmas celebration, things like the little drummer boy or the littlest shepherd or things like that, or the fourth wise man. And it's full of magic, you know, a magical star that transports mystical wizards across the desert sands. These are all wonderful stories, and they're fantastic stories. But because of this, in the general sort of imagination, Christmas has become this kind of magical time. And we've then the secular Christmas people have added in things like Frosty the Snowman and a red-nosed reindeer and a Santa Claus, who flies across the night sky and visits every home on Christmas Eve. And these so-called magical elements, therefore, have naturally made biblical scholars look askance at the whole Christmas story and say, you know, the whole thing is full of magical elements and fantastical elements. It's all one big, beautiful fairy tale, isn't it? And therefore, I've tried to explore the historical background of the Christmas story so that people can say, no, actually, there are lots of fantastical and magical elements that have crept into it, but at the root, at the basis, Matthew and St. Luke's story is a historical account.
So what else did you learn about the shepherds, as you did with the Magi, that surprised you with all your research and your experience in Jerusalem?
Well, one of the things that I learned was, I don't know whether you picked up, but over the last sort of several years, another sort of myth has crept into the Christmas story about the shepherds, and that is that the shepherds were actually breeding the lambs that would be used in the sacrifice at the temple, and that when the baby lamb was born, they would wrap it in strips of cloth and lay it in a feeding trough to wait for the priest to come to investigate the lamb to see whether it was suitable for sacrifice. And therefore, when the angel said, you shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes and laying in a manger, and this will be a sign unto you, that this was a prophecy that they were going to see the real Lamb of God.
Well, yeah, I actually have heard about that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a beautiful story, but I went out to Bethlehem, and one of the reasons I wanted to research this was to find whether there's any evidence for that story. And I'm sorry to say that there is not. I looked high and low and dug deep into every book and article I could find, and I spoke to scholars at the Hebrew University, and I spoke to the guides at Bethlehem and the shepherds at Bethlehem today, and this was nothing that they said there was any evidence for. However, there is some evidence that the shepherds were indeed raising the lambs to be used at the sacrifice at the temple in Jerusalem. There is a bit of evidence in the Mishnah, which is a Jewish collection of liturgical rules and rules for life, which indicates that the animals that were bred between Jerusalem and Bethlehem were to be used for the temple sacrifice. So it is very possible that the shepherds of Bethlehem were raising these sacred animals to be used in the many, many sacrifices taking place in the temple in Jerusalem.
Wow. We're talking with Father Dwight Longenecker. His new book, The Secret of the Bethlehem Shepherds, recently published by our friends at Sophia Institute Press. I don't know. For me, I guess, I don't know why people always want to add things to it. The story, I mean, the scriptures are so powerful to me. My husband and I came back to the Catholic Church through a non-denominational Bible study of all things, and I just love scripture. And I always got a great deal out of, and I try to always, obviously, read the narratives and whatnot. And I love the readings during Advent. I just don't know why we feel we have to add to the story of the King of Kings.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think that people add things to them for various reasons, which I actually explain in the book. And one of those is preaching points. In other words, preachers see particular parallels between the New Testament and the Old Testament. They see parallels between the gospel story and their lives. And to make them real for their congregation, they sort of elaborate the preaching point, or they elaborate the symbolism, and this therefore becomes part of the story. That's exactly what happened with this idea that the lambs were wrapped in swaddling clothes and laid in a manger. A preacher saw the significance between Jesus, the Lamb of God, and the lambs of the shepherds, and made a little logical leap or a speculation there, and that speculation then became a kind of contemporary myth about the gospel story. So people don't add things in order to corrupt it. They add it out of imagination and speculation,
right,
trying to make it more meaningful and more rich for people.
So how do we balance out, for example, especially if you have young children, how do you balance out the beauty and the truth of Scripture with all we see in the world this time of year with Santa and the reindeer and all of that?
I think this is one of the uses of Christmas being such a time for children, where actually through nativity plays and through the storytelling that goes on at Christmas, through nativity sets and the cribs that we have in our homes, the children can participate in this and they can actually share in this. One of the things we used to do during Advent when our kids were little was we would put Mary the statues of Mary and Joseph from the crib set upstairs, and day by day through Advent, they would move closer and closer to the crib set down below, which was moving closer and closer to Bethlehem. So there's little things that we can do like that where children join in with the Advent season
to prepare for Christmas.
I love that. I've heard of so many families doing that, and you explain things as they go along on their journey. So what did we actually find out? Inquiring minds want to know about Mary and their journey, Mary and Joseph. They said she didn't ride a donkey. So how did she get to where she was going? Walking? So as we say in Italy, St. Francis's donkey, which means you're 2 feet?
Well, one of the interesting details I found was in looking at Luke's gospel, we have some serious questions to ask. Galilee is about Nazareth, and Galilee is about 90 miles
right.
north of Nazareth,
yeah.
of Bethlehem.
Right.
And we know that Ein Kerem, where the visitation took place,
right.
where she went to visit Elizabeth, is another 7 miles south
of Jerusalem.
Bethlehem.
Well, yeah, Bethlehem, it's in the Jerusalem area, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. So when St. Luke says after the Annunciation that Mary made haste and traveled to visit her kinswoman, Elizabeth, we're talking about a young girl of perhaps 14 or 15 who's newly pregnant, making a journey on her own through a desert territory, which would have been dangerous with bandits and so forth, 90 miles to go and visit her cousin. And one of the books I found was a very interesting book by a scholar who has researched the papyri, the sort of paper documents that have survived in the Egyptian desert. And scholars have gone through these piles and piles of these ancient documents which have survived, and they're very ordinary things like invoices from businesses, letters from people to their family members, and scholars have gone through and translated these and to find out more about life in the early in the first century. And what she actually found was that it was very typical and common for women to travel to visit family members who were pregnant and to stay with them during their pregnancy. And they write letters back and forth saying, I'm going to come and visit you. I'm so happy that you're going to have a baby and things like this.
Mm.
And so they would have traveled. Very often they traveled alone or they traveled in caravans.
Caravans, that's what I was going to say. Dwight, we have to have you back on. I have a gazillion other questions, but we're out of time. Fascinating study. Thank you for doing this. Father Dwight Longenecker's new book, The Secret of the Bethlehem Shepherds.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
You've probably heard Venerable Father Patrick Peyton say, "The family that prays together stays together." Well, as the director of the Peyton Institute, I like to add that the family that plays together also prays together. Family play rituals, like family days, game nights, and other similar activities, aren't just fun things to do. They're ways Catholic families remind each other to celebrate the life God has given them. Daily play rituals remind families that both in good times and in hard times, God always wants us to look for reasons to rejoice. That's one reason family rituals for playing together are such an important part of Catholic family life. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I don't think people should have negative fears of God, but I think you should get a lump in your throat. You should feel excited. Suppose I was going to take you and introduce you to the Pope or to the President of some country or something. You might get a lump in your throat. Forget it. Every day, you, I, live and move and have our being in the presence of God. These are the class of feelings we should have, and we should have them to an intense degree if we really had the sight of Almighty God. These feelings are the feelings which we shall have if we realize His presence, and in proportion as we believe that He is present, we shall have them. And not to have them is not to realize, not to believe that God is present to us.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
If I disciplined consistently, I'd be disciplining constantly. If I were consistent in my discipline, that would mean I would discipline more, and I'd be disciplining him often. The exact opposite is the case. More consistent discipline leads to less constant discipline. Why? Because you're predictable. The child knows if he does A, you'll do B. That is why, when you are predictable in your authority, you will act actually have to use that authority less. Consistent discipline leads to less constant discipline. The more you act when you need to act, the less you will have to act in the future with similar misbehavior.
Happy Feast of St. Nicholas. It is a Tuesday. It's 40 minutes past the hour. You are listening to Catholic Connection. It's a co-production, of course, of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN, just celebrating last week, as you may have heard, 20 years on Ave Maria Radio for this program and 15 years syndicated on EWTN. And every day is a gift that we get to talk about Jesus and his one holy Catholic and apostolic faith. And especially when we get to talk with wonderful priests such as Father Bart Tolson, who was on with us when the movie Father Stu first came out. And now there is a re-release of the movie, a little bit, how do we say, Father Bart, maybe a cleaned up version. Now, you were friends with Father Stu, and we talked to you when the movie first came out. So before we get into the new release, let's just tell our listeners, if they're not familiar with the amazing Father Stu, who he was and how you got to know him. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Teresa. Good to be with you again. Yeah, Stu and I were ordained together on December 14th. Our ordination anniversary is coming up next
week.
Wow,
very close.
2007. We weren't in the same seminary together, but we were seminarians in the Diocese of Helena together. And we were friends. We were buddies, and we were both converts. And we had a similar bad senses of humor. And we were similar, but we're also opposites. And so We kind of came into the church together and became priests together.
And he became known for, well, he had many, many challenges, but he became known for the fact that the way he converted to Catholicism, he met a girl that he really liked when he was serving out in California. He was trying to be an actor and fell in love and decided, okay, I'll check out this Catholic thing. And then one thing led to another. There was some criticism when the movie of his amazing life came out, and Mark Wahlberg did such a great job. He was actually on the show playing the role of the language. But you and I talked about it, and In many ways, okay, some people thought it was over the top, but it was a realistic look at the life he had lived prior to entering the seminary, correct?
Right. Stu, it's not depicted in the film, but Stu has a younger sister, and she told me every bad word she ever learned was from Stu. So that probably sums it up in terms of his language.
So in terms of the new release, what did you think of the idea of, let's say, sending out or re-releasing it with more of a cleaned-up version?
I was really surprised at first. I know both Rosie and Mark were really committed to being very authentic. Like, they wanted to see this guy who is, you know, was really used this rough language and was really of the world, had this incredible, profound conversion, and cleaned up his act in a very genuine and authentic way. But I think voices prevail. Like, we really want our kids to see it. We want other people to see it, and they just can't get past the language. And so I think Mark eventually was convinced to try to do another version, and eventually he convinced Rosie to do it. She did a great job with it. The nice thing about this version is you hear some of her great dialogue a little bit better, I think, because you're not listening to all that rough language in this cut.
Mm-hmm. What do you think Father Stu would say about it, the new release?
That's a good question. I think he said the more people that can see the transforming
right.
power of God in his life, the better off they are.
So what lessons do you think, because I thought the movie was excellent. Yes, the language was rough, but at the same time, I thought Wahlberg did such a good job of portraying the struggles. What lessons, especially coming up on the ordination, your ordination, does he leave us with that are timeless, do you think, Father?
I think no matter where you are, no matter what your trials, no matter what your sufferings, whether you're not in despair, why did God do this to me? Has God abandoned me? Why does bad things happen? Why is there evil? There is a God. There is a God who loves you. There is a God who has a plan for your life, and he can transform your life. Sufferings might be necessary along the way, but they lead to a greater purpose and a greater good in heaven. And Stu's life is an absolute real testimony to that. And it has brought so many people hope, so many people conversion, so many people transformation in their Christian walk. It's just amazing and beautiful to see how God works through our sufferings to lead to something greater in transformation. And also the fact that heaven is real. another indication that the saints are with us and heaven is real.
In terms of his own challenges, physical challenges, that scene in the church where Wahlberg is on his knees and asking God why, so many of us can relate to, whether it be a physical suffering or an emotional suffering, a relationship that's gone wrong or broken, you know, family breakdown. That kind of a scene, I think, is something to which we can all relate.
Yes, we've all had those moments. Every last one of us is saying, why, God, did this happen to me? Why did you let this happen? But in the end, what Stu discovered is he let this happen because it was a greater testimony to the cross and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's why it happened. Stu couldn't see it in the moment of his despair when he was diagnosed, when he thought he wasn't going to be a priest, and when he didn't know how he was going to serve as a priest from a wheelchair. He asked all of those questions. But in the end, he was able to do all those things and lead people to Jesus Christ because they saw the cross of Christ in Stu's sufferings from his wheelchair, and is an incredible priest.
Yeah, it was. Talking with Father Bart Tolleson, who's been on with us before, a friend of Father Stu Long, and Father Bart is a priest assistant to the Bishop for Diocesan Events and the Director of Permanent Deacons and Diaconate Formation, parochial vicar at the Cathedral of St. Helena in Montana, also newly appointed to the Board of Trustees at Carroll College. What have you seen in terms of, you mentioned there's been a lot of conversions. Was this before the film, after the film, the original release, or both?
Well, in Stu's life, initially, you know, a lot of people came to convert just because of knowing Stu. So you have this incredible story. But now that people watch the film, and from all over the world now, they're interested in, like, who was this guy? Was this a real guy? Did this really happen? And so they're asking questions. And so people are saying, this gives me hope. I've got this disease. I've got this trial. I've been estranged from the church. I've got this struggle with my family, and now I have hope that maybe God has a purpose in this. And so it's a very beautiful sort of thing, the effect this film has had on so many people's lives, basically to give them hope in a dark world. And so it's a beautiful thing to be able to share with people and to acknowledge that and see their own transformations.
I'm wondering, Father Bart, if people are keeping track, if someone is writing down some of these stories related to the impact Father Stu had on their life. Sounds like it'd make a great book.
Well, you know, actually, when I thought the film wasn't going to be made because it was in kind of Hollywood development chaos
right.
for about 6 years,
mm-hmm.
I had actually said, I'm afraid we're going to lose all of these stories. And so I kind of compiled my own memoirs about Stu, particularly about his priesthood and what we shared together. And so Ignatius has purchased that. We're hoping it should be out in 2023. We're trying to put that together. And so more, you'll be able to learn more about Stu's priesthood, which the film doesn't really tell. And also there's an organization we started, Beyond 227. So if you go to Beyond 227, 227 was Stu's room at Big Sky Care Facility. And so just all of the things that have happened since then, there's a place. If you've had something with Stu's intercession that has happened, you can drop us a line, an email, and we've had a whole list of testimonies now we're compiling that have happened with Stu's intercession. It's just amazing. So we're keeping track of it, and we'll see where this goes from here. There's a lot of good things happening out there.
So Beyond 227, is that a website? Is that a Facebook page? What is it, Father, online?
It's a website we've created, and there's a place you can email us and let us know what's going on. We've got some events that we're planning and just ways you can stay in touch with us in terms of if Stu's touched your life from the heavenly abode, so to speak, that we can track that and keep tracks on that and interact with you, too.
So is it beyond227.org.com? What is it?
.org, beyond227.org,
okay.
Yes.
That's awesome.
You.
See, that's the writer
yeah.
in me, because I'm thinking all these stories that must be out there about him. Don't let those go. Collect them, especially from you, because you knew him personally.
Right. And we are compiling them and collecting them. So if anyone out there is inspired and asks for Stu's intercession, drop us a line, drop us an email, beyond227.org.
How many people outside of the faith do you think, Father? Because in the film, they talk about the fact, and you can kind of see it. I don't want to give too much away, but there was such an outreach. It wasn't only to Catholics.
You know, when you would see the lines, as the film depicts at the very end, the lines of people waiting to see Stu, you could go through that line, and there'd be faithful Catholics in their line, but there also would be people who were maybe fallen away Catholics, people who didn't really maybe go to Mass every Sunday who wanted to talk to Sue. But there also would be people in that line who were not Catholic who wanted to talk to Sue, and some people who had no faith at all, zero faith. And the interesting thing is both of Sue's parents were agnostics, and eventually, before Kathleen died 7 months to the day that Stu died, after Stu died, she died 7 months later. She became Catholic right before she died, and then Bill Long had become Catholic just a few months before Kathleen died as well. And so Bill Long, still a faithful, practicing Catholic. They were both agnostics, and so to right. see his parents become Catholic and... you know, even just recently, I had a long chat with Stu's sister, who's an incredible, she's a wonderful woman, just amazing, about the Catholic faith. And just to see, you know, there's faith there in so many people. They just don't know how to put it together. And with the thing about Father Stu is he just brings the Catholic faith to light in a new way that people mm-hmm. need to hear it. Mm-hmm. It's really Pope Francis's message is shine the light of Christ in a way that people have never seen it before, and it just touched people's hearts. It's like, this is Catholic faith in a new way, lived out in a new way. It's the same old faith, but just with a new light shown upon it, and that's how Sue lived his faith. And so it's a beautiful thing to be able to do that for people to say, this is the light of Christ, but maybe in a way you haven't thought about it, which is what the world needs right now.
Amen. And yeah, it was interesting. I just saw there's a special report on the Pope over the weekend. Maybe you saw it, about him talking about us welcoming people with disabilities and the important part mm-hmm. of inclusion, and how it's such a huge part of the church's mission as an evangelizer, as our whole mission being evangelization. And I think about the statement that Father Stu made about his productivity and the beauty of his life. And then I was reading a horrible story this morning in preparation for the show about a woman in Canada who was injured. She had served for her country, and she was injured, and she's in a wheelchair, but she's struggling to get assistance that's due her. And so she calls the Canadian department, whatever it is in Canada, I'm not sure, maybe similar to our Vets Department, Department of Veterans, and they said to her, well, we can give you access to assisted suicide, as opposed to offering her help and giving her the what she needs. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it's so sad. I mean, the people that Stu touched at Big Sky Care Facility, they're such beautiful people. Their faith radiated out so much. I was just back at Big Sky just a few weeks ago talking to a woman who's now in a wheelchair on hospice care, and she just radiated the light of Christ so beautifully. And just to be able to share those moments, actually just talking about Father Stu, who had lived upstairs, and just to see the light of Christ shine on her face, and the hope she brought is to offer her sufferings for the world. It's just like, this is profound. I'm just right. so humbled to be in her presence today.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much that he left us and so much to build upon. I'm so glad you're collecting the stories, and I'm going to give out the website, 227.org, if you have an intercession perhaps from Father Stu, or just a note you want to share, you can go there and share your thoughts and your appreciation for the ministry of Father Stu. Father Bart, great to talk with you, and please let us know when that book comes out. I'm sure Kevin Wander will be in touch, but what a great idea. I'm going to have to contact my friends over there. They're wonderful people. They published one of my books, so good for you for working with Ignatius on this book, and we want to hear it first here, as we say, exclusively on Catholic Connection.
All right, Teresa, I hope so. Thanks for having me on. So good to talk to you again.
All right, happy Advent, early Merry Christmas to you. Really appreciate your insights on Father Stu. And again, there is a release of the film, what you might say is a cleaned up version in terms of the language, being released this Friday, December 9th. We'll be right back to let you know what's coming up on a Wednesday morning edition. You are listening to the one, the only EWTN. Stay tuned.
Abortion.
Pornography.
Embryonic stem cell research.
Corporate contributions to Planned Parenthood. Do you invest in companies that are engaged in these practices? The Ave Maria Mutual Funds do not, and their investment portfolios reflect that. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Now that the abortion problem has been returned to the states, we will most likely be called upon to give a reason for our pro-life activism. But this is more than a mere political issue. It's an opportunity to present the gospel of life It's an opportunity to demonstrate the kingdom's view of this world and of human life. And the central question in this dispute is going to be, what is the status of preborn human life? Many Christians need to recognize that, yes, we have to do the political thing, but we have greater opportunities here. We have an opportunity to engage people about the very meaning of life itself. I mean, that's why John Paul II wrote the Gospel of Life. He didn't just write some sort of political anti-abortion tract, right? He's talked about the Gospel of Life.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays at 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. It is a Tuesday morning. Coming up tomorrow, of course, we go to Rome to talk with our very own Joan Lewis as we move toward the Feast of the Immaculate Conception on Thursday, which is a holy day of obligation. We'll let you know what's happening with Rome with the Holy Father, has some travels coming up, and of course, much more news and information on a Wednesday. Ciao, ciao for now.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.